Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
His expertise in football is second to none.
670 The Score's senior football expert.
You're talking to one of the great techno boobs of all time.
Executive editor of Pro Football Weekly.
This is probably too much information, but I always keep my phone in my back pocket. I just feel like my ass is buzzing permanently at this point. It's crazy.
Shaw media analyst and sideline reporter for Westwood One.
We've got Joe calling in from Elgin.
I just want to say that you are so underrated. You're fantastic. You really are. You've got a great opinion. I would listen to you all day.
Hub Arkish.
I'd love to poke you. I'm not going to now.
With Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi on 670 The Score. The Score.
Let's talk football with Hub Arkish as we do on Mondays for a couple of segments here. He's on Twitter at Hub_Arkish, the Score senior football expert, executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media. He's with us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What a weird five or so days this has been, Hub. What a strange week. And I mean this when I ask you, where are we now with everything? Like, how do we sort of start up a quote-unquote normal week after everything we just kind of went through?
Well, that's a great question, Dan. And, you know, we tried this morning, visited with Matt for about 20 minutes at 9 o'clock this morning, and he certainly intends to have a normal week. The players, I hadn't even thought much about this, but he pointed out they're getting everybody back in town and back into meetings today with the little mini bye. And because it was the holiday, a lot of guys went home. They did have the weekend off. And they've got the best team in the NFL right now, record-wise. The Arizona Cardinals would be the number one seed in the NFC. They're coming in this week. They've had a bye to rest up and get Kyler Murray healthy. So they've got a tremendous challenge. And you want to talk weird? The Bears start their final six-game stretch one game out of the playoffs. You know, I know, that's the fact.
I know it's technically true, but
it's true any way you want to look at it. Now, am I predicting or pretending? No, of course not. But I mean, you talk about weird, you know, that's where they're at. And, you know, give the guy a break. I mean, regardless of what you think, you know, of the job he's done or his future, that's the reality. He's an NFL coach, and that's how they're going to approach this.
Well, it's when the organization, it gets this leaky when you have Brad Biggs, who is standing very firmly behind his detailed reporting of last week's chaos. We have your report as well that I don't doubt for a second, based on how it went down then and all of the stammering responses we've heard from the team there. It always tells me something organizationally when that level of uncertainty is there and the amount of information actually starts becoming available in the way that it is. There's something very Bears about it, and it tells me something when they're not able to control message.
Well, you know what was so interesting about it to me, Dan, is that, you know, first of all, as far as Brad's reporting, nobody disputed it. He said they canceled practice suddenly. They did. You know, now Matt came out and explained the reason for it, and I suppose the reason is quite true, but, you know, Brad was spot on. You know, people then tried to, I think Brad, the other quote in his reporting was players are quote, pissed off, close quote. And people jumped on that as, oh, he's lost the locker room. He didn't say he'd lost the locker room. He didn't say that that's what they were, you know, PO'd about. His reporting was spot on, as it always is with Brad. The story that I reported, that wasn't leaked. That was something that I spent weeks digging on. The sources are impeccable. There's no doubt in my mind that I was correct in the reporting. But it was interesting to me that in his Friday morning press conference, Matt wasn't asked. He chose to address each thing. He brought them up so that he could position them in the way that he wanted to, that he had to. And again, from his perspective, this is a man who you know, maybe his job is not as much in jeopardy as a lot of people think it is, but nonetheless, you hear the noise, you're going to do everything you can to save it. He's trying to position it for his football team to be successful over the last 6 weeks. So the only thing that leaked, as near as I can tell, was that ridiculous report last Tuesday that started everything.
What keeps coming up too, and I think fairly, at least when you talk to people who cover the team regularly, is how hard it is in a week like that to do your job when there's no locker room access, when there's just no player access whatsoever. And what amazes me is, even given this ridiculous top-down iron fist opportunity to control message, the Bears still are bad at it. Like, they don't have even the same pressures pulling at them as the Dallas Cowboys or even the New York Giants or anything like this. Even with every opportunity to control it, they can't get stuff straight. And I'll never stop being tickled by that, because it's just it's just how they have done business.
Well, you know, Dan, I think it's a fair commentary, and I think you're right. You know, and that's just the reality of it. And so at some point, you know, whatever business you're in, the top executive takes a step back and says, we got to get this right. And they keep trying, you know. And what is frustrating as a member of the media with the Chicago Bears is that they don't seem to be trying. They seem to think that this is okay. You know, that they seem to think that this is normal, you know, NFL business. And it's really not, you know, well, it's normal, but it's not the way the really good teams try and do it. And that is the reason that they have these problems. I wish there was something else I could say. I think you did make a really good point there too, though, that people don't, you know, pay enough attention to, which is, and nobody is making excuses. I'm not offering opinions. I'm just reporting here. The pandemic and COVID has obviously changed everybody's lives, but the outsized impact it's had on the way you prepare for and play professional football, and even more so the way you cover it, you know, with no one-on-one access to anybody at any time, is going to make this a very difficult job. But most other teams have continued to handle it better than this one has.
Do we know more about the running back situation as it pertains to the way whoever matters is thinking about the future? Khalil Herbert came on really strong in the absence of David Montgomery, and since has gone back to some kick return duties. Obviously, Montgomery has been the guy. But we thought about the way they're up against the salary cap and if they're going to be able to afford a 1-2 punch with a couple of similarly styled runners. What are they playing for?
When you say, what are they playing for, you mean the backs?
The backs themselves, yeah. Is there a competition here for one spot?
No, not for a year. I mean, you've got them both on the rookie contracts and favorable rookie contracts with a third-round pick and a sixth-round pick. You know, Herbert you've got for three more years, and Montgomery you've got at least one more year. I would think that they could try and extend Montgomery. They're going to be in really good salary cap situation. And you know, if they can, then you're set for 3 years, and you do need two, you know. So
or more.
I don't think exactly. I mean, if ever we've seen this year, you need at least two. So I think, you know, it's one of the there are, as negative as this whole thing has gotten, and it just frustrates me no end, because there are positives here. You know, you have to give anybody credit for them, but they're still here. There's a few spots that they're in pretty good shape in, and probably none better than running back right now, and there's no tension or pressure on that at the moment.
I loved what Olin Kreutz had to say early today on The Score when he was talking with Mully and Haw. He said, look, Bill Lazor's had his little run here, and the offense isn't scoring any points. So give it to somebody else. Give that playbook, that headset, and the play-calling duties. He mentioned Tom Herman. say, bring him down for whatever office he's in, let him have a shot. He said the secondary has been bad, and implying the secondary coaching hasn't been any good. He said whatever you got Mike Pettine around to do, if you were ever going to try some last-ditch stuff or some what-the-hell stuff, if you're Matt Nagy, you're probably going to get fired anyway. And regardless of your proximity to the playoffs, there's really no downside. Would you be supportive of moves like that to say, hey, we're gonna shake things up a little bit?
Yeah, you know, people need to understand Olin is one of the sharpest football minds in town. And as usual, I do agree with him on this stuff. The problem, though, is that in the case of Tom Herman, I don't even know if he's here. I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Nobody really knows, you know, what exactly his position and his job is. Now, Mike Pettine, I do know, is here. I don't know if I agree that the secondary coaching has been awful because, in fact, Jalen Johnson has made strides. Deion Bush was playing really well until he got hurt. Eddie Jackson has actually played better this year than last. Tayshaun Gibson continues to be a really dependable guy back there. The kid, and I talked with Matt extensively about this morning, the kid who slipped, obviously, is Kendall Vildor. And I think we were worried coming in about that nickel spot. It never really solidified. Shelley was playing better, and then he pulled the hamstring. But everything else Olin said, I absolutely agree with. And Bill Lazor's a great guy, and he's great to talk to, and he definitely has done a good job for this team because he did settle things down at a time when it had to be settled down, when Matt finally gave him the responsibility. But at the end of the day, you're still 30th in the league scoring points, and if Tom Herman were here, that is his bailiwick, so that would certainly make sense. Or you can try Flip. You know, you got John DeFilippo, didn't work well in his one shot, as I recall, as an offensive coordinator, but he's certainly an accomplished guy, and why not? I think it's a great suggestion.
Where are you on Cole Kmet as far as floor, ceiling, where he is relative to expectations now, and is he still on track to be an impact player at his position?
Well, floor is very high. I think we see that because he is definitely improving each week. Impact player, there's two levels of tight end. There's the rare air in which you find, the
Kittle
Gronkowskis
and, Kelsey,
and Kittle and Kelsey and Darren Waller, the kid out in Oakland. But Waller is more of a Jimmy Graham type. He's more of a move tight end, more of a U. And so when you look at Cole, he definitely can be one of the better Y tight ends in the league, and I think, you know, could have a Pro Bowl or two in his future. But does he have and he's going to be as good an inline blocker as you're going to find, but does he have the dynamic pass catching abilities of a Gronk or a Kelsey or a Kittle? I don't know. You know, that's where you wonder about the ceiling. I think the comps may be Heath Miller is a guy that comes to mind. Jason Witten is a guy. Now, Jason Witten may be a Hall of Famer. That's a pretty good comp, but that style, that type, I think he may be more that player. But you've got to be very pleased with the way he's improved in recent weeks. And I do think the ceiling is high. But, you know, impact player at tight end, there's a handful of those, and I don't know if he's going to be able to get there, only because, you know, he's a great tough runner after the catch.
He's not fast.
He doesn't have great speed, and more than that, he doesn't even try and be elusive at all, you know, and we still haven't really seen him split a seam. And so I think that, you know, the ceiling is probably very, very good. I don't know if it's great.
Speaking of tight ends with run after the catch issues, did you ever think Greg Olsen would be this good a broadcaster?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, well, we've known Greg for a long time, and he's always been really well-spoken. Really glad to see it didn't take him long to get a little opinionated, too. Yep. But why not? You know, there's nothing left to accomplish in the game now. I don't find him, you know, what drives me nuts is these guys like Ryan Clark, you know, who think being nasty and mean makes him opinionated, and it just makes him nasty and mean. Greg is very well-spoken. He'll give you opinions, but he doesn't go negative on you, you know, but you know, if a guy makes a bad play, he'll say it. If a guy makes a mistake, he'll say it. But he doesn't have to get nasty about it. And to me, that's a really comfortable listen.
Yeah, he was a regular on the show with Terry and me for a while, and I think just as a player, he was so guarded and just being careful to never say the wrong thing, you know, freed up from some of those locker room responsibilities. It usually takes a while to lose that I'm a player, I got to take care of all the players. But he, like you say, he will say that if this guy had it to do all over again, he probably would have done this instead of this, which is his nice way of saying a guy did it wrong.
Yeah, I think the other thing to realize about Greg is that he has had, you know, some varied and difficult and exceptional life experiences away from the game. I mean, this is a full-grown young man. We forget that when these guys get done, in some respects to some of us, it's not just because I'm old. I always thought this way. They're still kids. You know, the old veterans are 30, 32, 33, and they've been guarded in this world where they've been coddled from day one because they've been so special. And it takes them a while to grow and mature. You know, once they get away from the game, it's usually happening towards the end of their careers. But in Greg's case, you know, he's been through enough that this is a, you know, full-grown, fully matured man the minute he walks into the broadcast booth.
We have more football to talk with Hub in just a bit, including looking at the overall landscape of the NFL and a certain college outcome that I think deserves a little room for some opinion here on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Talking football with Hub Arkish here on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show, Sports Radio 670, The Score. And just looking through the NFL standings, it's sort of been this ongoing thing, Hub, all year as we, with every next week of data, we assess who some of these favorites are, and they rise and they fall, and we got one coming to town this week. But what more did we learn about this cloud of Super Bowl contenders in your mind?
You know, Dan, I don't know that we learned anything this weekend. I mean, it's like you just said, they rise and they fall. I mean, I think you'd have to say that the New England Patriots kind of stunningly are the best team in the AFC right now. Now, you know, in the next 3 weeks, they get Buffalo twice and Indianapolis, and so that could change very quickly. One of the things I did not realize until I was doing some work yesterday for this week's TV show over at NBC Sports is the Kansas City Chiefs, they've won four in a row. That's not surprising. But in the last three, they've given up 7, 14, and I think it was 9 or 11 points. And that was, you know, one of the worst defenses in the league a few weeks ago. And so if they have figured out the defensive side of it, there's a good chance they will again be the best team in the AFC by the end of the season. And just when I thought the Colts were going on a roll, they blow that 10-point lead to the Bucs yesterday. So that's the up and down. You look at the NFC, I'm not so sure the San Francisco 49ers aren't the hot team right now.
Wow.
You know, they're getting healthy and just more impressive each week. And, you can't deny or dispute the Packers, but every week I try and figure out how they're doing it. You know, it just it doesn't make much sense. I felt all along that I have consistently underrated Dak Prescott. He apparently is now one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. But that said, I have said all along the team was overrated, the Cowboys, and clearly they are. And so, you know, with 6 weeks left, so much of this can change. And of course, the Rams on a three-game losing streak right now. I don't think we know. You know, I guess the Bucs, who bounced back with a big win on the road yesterday, and they're the defending champs. I suppose if I had to predict right now, you'd be looking at a Tampa New England, you know, Super Bowl, and how cool would that be?
And despite everything he's gone through and all of his public embarrassment, Aaron Rodgers continues to do what he has done, regardless of all of the moving pieces around him, as annoying as it is to any of us who have rooted against him and now do so increasingly.
He's one of the greatest players in the history of the game. I don't think there's any question about that. He is one of the probably five greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game. And he is as unlikable a human being as I've ever been around. I think that one of the things that does puzzle me a little bit, I don't know that we're getting the full story on this injury, though, because I've broken pinky toes a number of times, and it, you know, it's not comfortable, but it's not that bad. And he is a tough guy. I'm not questioning him in any way. I think there's got to be more to it than that. Now, I know when you get turf toe, that's usually that's always the big toe or sometimes the toe next to it. I don't know if they call it the index toe. I don't think you can get turf toe with a pinky toe. I could be wrong, but the injury is a bit of a mystery to me. But yeah, I mean, you know, as a football player on the field, I don't think you can give him too much credit. He is. We talk about, you know, what makes the great ones the greatest is the ability to elevate the play around them, of players around them. Who does that more than Aaron Rodgers? You know, nobody that I see.
Your Michigan Wolverines did it. They actually went and did it. And I was asked in transition my sports highlight of the weekend. I don't really have a rooting interest, but man, kind of rolling out of bed on a lazy Saturday morning and turning on the TV right around 11 o'clock, a big mug of hot coffee underneath a blanket on the couch and settling in for that. That was some real-ass football going on out there, and I know that there was 105,000 people or whomever who were excited in a way they haven't been in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, actually, believe it or not, 114,000. That's why they call it the big house. Pat Finley, the Sun-Times, we sit next to each other here in the media room. We were talking about this a little while ago. I cannot remember the last time that I was able to sit down as a fan, and you know, everybody listening probably knows by now I'm a Michigan alum, and watch an entire football game and enjoy myself so much. The puppy was driving me nuts part of the time, but other than that, it was great. And and I kept thinking, does everybody who didn't go to Michigan or Ohio State appreciate this for what it is? I mean, everything about it. You know, they call it the game. We know about the rivalry. I've lived it. I know a lot of people haven't. But the scuffle in the tunnel at halftime and the scuffles on the field. And let me say it. I tweeted this yesterday. I mean, Stroud and Henderson and those three wideouts, those guys are special. I mean, all five of those guys are going to play on Sunday. Michigan was just clearly the better team. And I didn't realize how good they were. They've been building to this. That was the plan all along. You go look back now at that Michigan State game, and they blew a 30-14 lead. They have nobody to blame but themselves. But the officials took a clear touchdown off the board before the half. And with that, they possibly are undefeated right now. It doesn't really matter, because if they beat Iowa, they're going to be in the playoff. And let me just say it, and I know people have stopped being educated fans and just have opinions. That's all they want to talk about with all the negativity we have here with the Bears.
Well,
you know where I'm
preamble.
Going.
I can't wait to hear what follows. No,
you know where I'm going. Sure. Yeah, Jim is Harbaugh, and I have been friends for a long time. It was my first year in the Bears broadcast booth was the year he was drafted in the first round, and you'll appreciate this. He comes in as a rookie and buys a townhouse down the street from me in Deerfield on Chestnut, right there by the tracks. And so
he did.
He lived there the first couple of years he was with the Bears. It's a long story I won't bore everybody with, but he and I have been friends for a long time. He is different. There's no question about that. He's crazy. There's no question about that. But this guy's a hell of a football coach. I mean, you look at his record everywhere, and he probably made some mistakes like we all do in the first few years at Michigan. The expectations were so outsized. But in 1 year, he revamped and changed everything, and now you look at the result. So I just felt really good for him. I felt good for all my friends who are also alum. And I felt good for everybody because it was just the epitome of what college football is supposed to be. That's why they call it the game.
Do you think he gets the itch at some point? Or does this solidify, does this validate all the time that he's put in and his vision at Michigan? Or is there still a number and a checkbook and an opportunity to avenge that Super Bowl loss that still gets to him?
I think that he wants to win a national title. First, he's got to win a Big Ten title.
Because that would be nice.
Let's be honest. I mean, as great as Saturday was, if they lose to Iowa this weekend, it only looks great to Michigan alum because everybody else, he still couldn't win the championship. He's got to win the Big Ten title this Saturday. If he does that, he gets into the playoff. I would have thought before Saturday they couldn't play with Georgia, probably not Alabama. Cincinnati doesn't scare me. I think they'd handle Notre Dame. But if they get in, you know, and they're even as impressive or more impressive doing it against Iowa, who knows? If he wins a national championship, I have no doubt that in the right situation, he'd want to come back and win a Super Bowl. He is absolutely the most competitive human being I've ever known. Now, that said, he also truly does love Ann Arbor, and he's really got his family settled there. And I do think he'd be happy coaching however many more years and retiring there. But once he checks off that national championship, my gut is telling me that the competitive urge would get him, because the offers would be huge, and he'd have his pick of jobs, and it wouldn't at all surprise me. He's only, I want to say he's 55. I could be wrong about that. So there's time, you know, and I certainly wouldn't rule it out.
He was looking like Bo, too. Have you noticed that? Like, with the glasses and the hat and the overcoat, like, it's almost like body language. Some of the grimacing that he does, it's like he's channeling him somehow.
I loved the quote they showed. I think it was early in the third quarter, and it was a quote from Media Day this summer, where he said, "Our goal is to win the Big Ten, to beat Ohio, and if we don't, we will die trying."
And he means it.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, nobody had to die. You know, I don't think anybody would have. But that's not, you know, a lot of folks see this stuff. They think, it's a show, it's a put on, it's fun. That is real. I mean, and that, by the way, that's the family. I mean, John it presents himself differently, but it's the same mentality. I got to know Jack, their dad, you know, when Jim was here, in a fun kind of way. You know, sometime when we have a long time, I'll tell some of these longer stories. That's who they are. You know, they are the embodiment of college football in particular, and now with their success in the NFL, you know, John's already got a ring. I know Jim would like to have one too. They're one of the great football families of all time.
Before we let you go, the news that crossed today earlier, Adam Schefter says 8 positive COVID tests for the Dallas Cowboys, including head coach Mike McCarthy. Just not out of the woods with this stuff yet, Hub. Whether it's Omicron variant or not, I assume it's not, because they say it's not the United States. But it's the NFL, I don't know if they just can't get enough people vaccinated, or they can't keep people separated enough. But for a team like the Cowboys, with some real expectations, you were talking about Dak Prescott before, and some very high hopes, this is not good.
No, I think the interesting question, I guess what qualifies as a breakthrough case is when people who are vaccinated get it. We don't know, you know, how many of these are breakthroughs and how many are unvaccinated. I mean, I know in the case of Matt Nagy here, he's vaccinated. That was a breakthrough case. But usually when you have a cluster like that, you don't get that many breakthroughs at one time. So
right.
the vaccines continue to be an issue. You know, people continue to not understand the full scope of it. And this Omicron stuff is scary. You know, it's so, you know, the NFL, just like the rest of us, I think the NFL continues to do a better job than most. But yeah, I mean, you know, they worry tremendously about their competitive balance, and having a team like the Cowboys very much in the thick of it. Now, if they have to go, you know, lose a game or two because they couldn't field everybody, that's nobody wants that. You know, nobody wants anybody to get sick, period. So it is an ongoing concern. That's why, by the way, you may recall that they announced 2 weeks ago that they were putting all 32 teams back in extreme protocol.
Yep.
Coming into the holidays, because they were afraid of exactly this. And I mentioned at the top with you that the Bears, I didn't realize how many of these guys probably went home, you know, and so all of that increases the risk, and it's something that they're just going to have to double down on now and see, you know, how much they can limit it. They've still done a much better job than most industries, though.
Hub, thank you as always. We'll talk on Wednesday. You'll take a bunch of calls.
All right, man. Have a good day.
That is Hub Arkish. And we've gone this entire time really without talking about the Chicago Bulls. And I think we should, because they played a couple times. They're playing tonight, and it is the matchup of the Ball Brothers and all that that means. There is more to the story next on The Score.
Uh-oh, welcome to Big Baller Zone.
Which actually existed yesterday. There wasn't just a theoretical Big Baller Zone. There was a pop-up store in Little Italy to help promote the matchup tonight between LaMelo Ball and Lonzo Ball, the father LeVar Ball, whose voice you heard just there. And here's the thing. It was funny, maybe it was. Oh, look, they're playing in Lithuania. And what is this crazy LeVar Ball doing and promoting these ridiculous shoes and making a show out of these kids? And you know what? He did something right. And we've said it before, that not only are Lonzo and LaMelo, both terrific basketball players. They're also, by all accounts, absolutely hardworking teammates and solid young men. Whatever the LaVar and his wife have done, more power to them. I know it's not everybody's choice of how to do it, but these are a couple of very successful young pros. And the matchup is fascinating because they're very different players. I don't know who's going to guard whom, but LaMelo is a star in the making. He's the truth. If you haven't really watched him, he reminds me of Lloyd Daniels. And that's a high compliment for me. Of a guy that size, of a guy who is 6'7", 6'8"?
6'7", 180.
Yeah, 6'7", 180. Like he reminds me of Lloyd Daniels. The way he sees an entire play developing in front of him. And Lonzo is amazing in the full court. Lonzo is not his brother when it comes to half court facilitating, but what he's done fixing his shot, he completely broke down his shot and rebuilt it. And now when he looks for that quick defense hasn't set itself, I got an open wing three, I expect it to go in. And when it's on the baseline, that corner three, that's damn money, I expect. Anything in the mid-range, I expect is going to hit the front of the rim, and I'm just hopeful it hits the front of the rim. And the finishing still needs work, but his defense is terrific, and the three-point shooting has absolutely kept them in games. Charlotte is fun and fast and multifaceted and small, especially tonight. They're going to be small, too. So I think, Rick, I think you said in the pre-show meeting, if there ever was a, hey, Nikola Vucevic, if you're going to shake off whatever you've got, whatever this malaise has been, for the moment the season began, even pre-COVID, there was all this like heavy-footed, shots left short, everything in between, lots of in and outs. Shake it off. Go get yourself 30 and 18 tonight.
Yeah, if there was ever a night for them to give him more post-ups, which, you know, with DeMar DeRozan being here, have not been as plentiful because then you're kind of operating the same space and a lot of things get gummed up.
Yep.
This is the night to do it because, with, mind you, Miles Plumlee, not that great. However, he's at least a big guy that can move a little bit. And without him, they've been starting PJ Washington, who's good player, but a four. Like they're basically starting a couple of fours with him and Miles Bridges. And Bridges could even play the three if you really want him to. So they play pretty small.
Wherever Bridges is, he's going to try to dunk everything.
Oh, yes.
I know that. He's been putting on like in-game dunk shows.
Yes. It's going to be a great watch tonight regardless. But then the only thing that I think could maybe worry Vooch is if they double him down in the post and make him a little uncomfortable in terms of space, maybe instead of size. So maybe that's something that Charlotte does. But Charlotte doesn't do a whole lot defensively these days. I mean, this is a matchup of the two teams that just lost to the Houston Rockets. So go crazy, Chicago.
Go Bears.
Yeah.
That should be its own pop-up store. Right next to the Big Baller brand, you could have the commemorating that both teams have lost to the Houston Rockets. Although, if you're buying stock, Rockets are not a bad buy and hold for a while right now.
Because definitely a while.
A while, but they've got some pieces there. They've got some live wire bodies and some guys who are, you know, jumping up and down and trying to block every shot.
Well, they better start getting good quick because they owe picks to the Oklahoma City Thunder,
right?
Because they traded for Russell Westbrook.
I think everybody owes picks to the Thunder one way or another.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But this is the Bulls Heat game, just while we're here talking, that was, they lost to a better team. And the fact that they were able to throw that zone at him with that much success, you got to shoot your way out of that zone. You got to pop a team. You cannot have that many possessions be in a zone at the NBA level.
Or move.
You just
have
can't.
Guys move. The fact that they had nobody running the baseline, they had nobody going into the middle just to try and facilitate a little bit. They had a couple possessions with DeRozan and LaVine where they played a little bit of two-man game in a smaller area, and they were able to get a decent shot, and the shot just didn't go in. But still, like, having to work that out a little bit, they're going to see more and more of that as the year goes on. Like, Miami put a lot of stuff on tape on how to attack the Bulls offensively and defensively. Like, you got a real scout job there because you had a good coaching staff that had 2 days to prepare.
And the problem with exactly what you're saying, if they go to that matchup 2-3, and ideally that baseline cut, what you want against that is high-low action. And they were getting Caruso with his back to the basket at the foul line. What you want is some elbows and blocks. Those are the vulnerable areas in that. And a quick high-low relies on that baseline cut to whatever you want to call it, the short corner there in that little slack area. It takes away the corner three. And so much of what they do offensively is designed around rotate, and then make them sleep on that corner three reversal or that quick little duck in. And if you are cutting, it serves two masters in that zone defense. And if you're giving up a shot, chances are you're giving up a two.
Now, mind you, most teams are not going to run that as well as the Miami Heat. Like, they have the personnel to do it. They're just an incredibly smart veteran team. But still, like, there's things to be able to learn from that, you know, on both ends of the court. Like, Vucevic and DeRozan got attacked mercilessly in that game, and so did Kobe White. So when you think of maybe what could be some shortfalls or pitfalls, there you go, that you don't see right now in the regular season normally, those types of things are the reason some people, maybe me included, think the Bulls have the type of cap on what they can be that you know, have been put out there, even though a lot of people are so going woo Bulls.
See, now this is interesting to me as well, because, you know, you bring up the fact that they're stagnant offensively in the half court, and I thought I saw something related to that point against Indiana a little over a week ago. I threw it to the group chat and I said, are they playing an extended 2-3 on the Bulls?
It looked like right. It looked like it because of the lack of
exactly.
movement.
Right.
That's what I thought was it appeared that they're standing there with all their arms up, but that's how it's going to look even in a softer man coverage if you're not cutting. Look at a football game and everything that happens pre-snap just to determine man versus zone. And the number of times you run over here, did a guy run with you? Cut this way, you come here, did a guy come with? That when you're not getting that in your half court offense, you're not allowing yourself to get visual evidence that a man is running with another man, and that of course it looks like a 2-3. And if you're not going to shoot a team out of it immediately, you're going to pay. While we're airing Bulls grievances here, and I know we're late for it, but if we're doing this. Zach has been making me crazy lately. Not Zaidman. He generally does, but Zach LaVine, he makes more awful shots relative to situation, shot clock, scoreboard, personnel. Like I don't know if he cares, and maybe he just doesn't because he knows he can. But the person, and I've heard Stacey say he makes tough shots. I agree. He also makes terrible shots, and they go in, and I don't know how you coach that. Do you say, explain that to me, or what did you see? When he comes back there, he's like, yeah, it was a contested two with three guys on me, bottom of the net.
Because you are a hater.
No, I'm not. I'm just trying to tell you what I see in games, the number of times where I go, oh, my God, what? Okay. All right, I guess you can. I guess I can't cut. But what are you? Oh, okay. All right, I guess.
There's a little Kobe White in there, too, sometimes.
Well, yeah. I mean.
I see Kobe White launch up a three. I say, no, no, no. Okay. All right, good. I mean it.
Kobe's going to have to because his defense blows. And how can you come off an injury and not have put on weight?
It was a shoulder, though.
I know, but do something. Do some sit-ups or do some something, whatever you got to do. Do some steroids. I mean, find since the NBA, find some way. Like, usually a guy comes, he's been hurt for a while. So, oh, well, you know, at least he got bigger and stronger while he was hurt. He's still, I don't know, did his arms get shorter? Did he have his arms shortened again? Because it always looks like he sticks his arms in pencil sharpener. And out he comes.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a Kyle Korver-y thing going on there.
Kinda, yeah. And it's also just the way he plays defense and sort of, you know, kind of like pecks around a little bit. But these are quibbles. The Bulls are fun, and I'm going to have fun with them tonight, as you will too. A 6:45 pregame on your home for Bulls basketball. Sports Radio 670, The Score.
I would have said thank you kindly for that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Better over here. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.